It's Monday, October 12th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Kevin, I got a great show lined up for you, and of course, it's a rare early recording here in Honolulu, so I got a great show for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There's no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey, everyone, welcome to the show. And, of course, I'm glad to be back in Honolulu. It seems like it's been forever, but yet one show here, and then I head out tomorrow night for Las Vegas. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But, of course, I want to give a warm welcome to all of the longtime listeners of the show, give a warm welcome to the Ohana, and, of course, thank them for being part of the family and continue to, of course, we're staying subscribed to the show. And for those of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, hey, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. And check out the show over there. You can find links to the old podcasts via the podcast link on the website. Sign up for the newsletter. That will get you the show notes. Basically, the show notes cover everything I talk about during the show and listener submissions and so forth. And you get an email on that immediately following the show so that when you do download the podcast, either through iTunes, Zoom Marketplace, or however you get the show delivered to you automatically, that you'll have the content and basically from the podcast and also the links to go along with it. Of course, if you're not signed up for the newsletter, you can always come over to geeknewscentral.com. The show notes will be posted there as well. Very extensive. All the content that we cover is covered within that. So, but sign up for that newsletter. Gets it delivered directly to your inbox. Of course, we want you to subscribe, of course, to the podcast via iTunes or Zoom Marketplace or however else you're catching the show. There's a number of you that are catching the show now via BlackBerry, a huge number of you, matter of fact. We've got a huge influx of BlackBerry listeners, those of you on your iPhones or your Androids, whatever it may be. Hey, thanks for being here. Of course, thanks for staying subscribed. I'm going to make a little adjustment here, as usual, to the camera pitch. It's never quite right until I start the show, and then I say, yep, angle's off a little bit. So... let me change. That's better. A little better on the frame. For those of you on Ustream, hey, welcome to the show, and glad you could catch the live video stream of us today. Twitter out. Let your friends and folks that follow you know that I'm up live, and they can come and join, watch the show as well. Of course, the podcast audience, you're getting this whenever you may be listening to it. And again, we appreciate your ongoing support. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's happening here. I arrived back in Honolulu Saturday evening. Had a pretty much uneventful flight on the way back from Washington, D.C. Got in here 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I guess, Honolulu time. Got a lot done. Believe it or not, I slept most of the way back and was able to get a lot of work done when I got back Saturday and continued through Sunday. And today seems like it's been race around getting ready to go. I have on my to-do list, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things left and a trip to the CPA tomorrow morning. So right at the last minute of leaving, getting on the airplane, I'm going to be pretty busy. But Blog World and New Media Expo starts on Thursday. Of course, the convention floor will be open on Friday and Saturday. The booths will be available. My team is all ramped up. All our stuff is starting to drop ship into Vegas right now. And we've only got really one small item that we're a little worried about delivering on time. But I think we're going to be okay. It may get there midday on Friday. But which is not going to affect the booth or anything like that. But I did put out a video yesterday. You'll see it on geeknewscentral.com, and basically talks about our schedule for Blog World, about the party on Friday night that we're going to be having. If you're in the Vegas area and you're a listener of the show, really your entrance to that party is through either our Facebook page or going over to coming out to the convention floor and actually picking up a ticket from us at the booth for our Friday night party. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of great entertainment. I heard that Elvis is going to be in the house along with some showgirls, so along with music, entertainment, food, drinks, of course. So have a good time on Friday night. But our most important thing is we're going to Vegas to promote our theme, Blog Louder. And being that it is Blog World and New Media Expo, Blog Louder is a theme that should resonate with bloggers, we hope, to make them understand that, hey, you can reach a bigger audience in your blogging audience by considering creating new media. And we're going to talk about our tools and platform to make that possible for them. Of course, sponsorship availability as well. Now, there's going to be Angelo Mandato, our CIO. He's going to be participating in Las Vegas WordCamp. He's going to be doing a one-hour session on getting your blog podcast ready. He'll be talking about different plugins that you can use on your blog get ready to be, have it podcast ready. Then I'm going to be doing two sessions, both on Saturday. The Saturday sessions essentially is basically going to, the first session I do is going to be based upon getting your show advertiser ready and talking about the things you need to do to really attract a good advertiser and keep a good advertiser. And then later in the afternoon, I'm going to be hooking up with Rob Greenlee. He's from the Zune Marketplace. He's the podcast guru over there. I'll also be hooking up with the gentleman behind Podcast Pickle, Gary Leland. And the three of us will be on a panel talking about podcast directories and how to get exposure from that. So two sessions for me on Saturday, one for Angelo on Friday. And then, of course, we'll be available on the show floor pretty much 24/7 within Vegas. All you got to do really is text me. You guys see my telephone number on the website. If you want to reach me, text me right on my cell. That'll probably be the easiest way to connect with me up. But should be a good time. And then Sunday morning, I pack up bright and early. I have to be at the airport like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I head for Florida. Going to be in the Orlando area. At this time, I don't think I'm going to be doing a podcaster meetup, and here's the reason why. Monday night, I have a show that I'll be doing locally, remotely. Tuesday night, I have a pre-established function. Wednesday, I'm actually going to hook up with my daughter, who is in Tampa. So her and I are going to go out to dinner and hang out on Wednesday. Then Thursday, again, I have an evening show and then a very early Friday morning flight back to Honolulu. So really no time for meetups in the Orlando area. But I'm home for a couple of days once I get back, and then boom, I'm right back out to Silicon Valley. I believe I fly out, I have to check my schedule, either Sunday night or Monday morning for San Francisco. Then I'll be in Silicon Valley all week. The final week of October, then finally home for, I hope, a good part of November, although there is some things shaping up already that may make me travel back to the mid part of the country sometime in November, but that's yet to be seen. So pretty busy schedule throughout the rest of the month, and it'll be a show on the road. We'll not be here in the studio. Matter of fact, I had kind of forgot that I was going to be back here to do one show, and I had packed everything up. So, my wife was like, wow, your office was clean and organized. And yesterday afternoon, she goes, oh, yeah, you got a show to do. And I had everything strewn out in the wires and stuff. So she had to laugh that, how it goes from being very neat and picked up when I'm not here to very cluttered. Now, one thing I was going to say is last week, I didn't announce this on the show specifically because my house was empty. My wife had won a sweepstakes, and it was a local sweepstakes. She had applied through something she had seen, and it was from Kraft Foods, and she won a free trip. Actually, it was 4 days, 3 nights in San Diego, all expenses paid, hotel, rental car, tickets to SeaWorld, the zoo, and so forth. So my kids were on a fall intermission, And it's basically here in Honolulu, they go to school year-round. So they had loaded up while I was in Washington, D.C. My wife and the kids flew out the very next day to San Diego, spent the week in San Diego. They had a great time. And then they got back in here Friday, and then I followed them in on Saturday. So I didn't want to really talk about the house being empty for the week while they were in San Diego, but it's pretty cool. She worked pretty hard for that. When she got the actual notice that she was one of the finalists to win, they made you go through like five steps. And basically, the steps were hard enough that the average Joe probably wouldn't have went through them. I was kind of skeptical because I went through and said, okay, this is looking fishy. But it was all by Kraft Food, and she won a mini sweepstakes and had a great free trip to San Diego courtesy of Kraft. So we'll be talking more about that. And she actually has got some video that I'm going to be putting. Actually, she shot the video. I'm going to put it together and provide back to the folks over there. They actually sent her with a camera and everything. So that was pretty cool. So that was kind of the little mini secret I wasn't telling you guys about last week that I had mentioned in the show. Okay, let me see here. What else? Under 1 week left for nominations at the Podcast Awards website. Yesterday was, of course, was a day that we hit our midway point on nomination period. So the nominations close on October 18th at 23:59. Eastern Standard Time. So if you don't have your audiences engaged already, please do so. Get them engaged. Get them over there. Get your shows nominated so that you have a chance to make the nomination slate. Only 10 shows per category make the slate. And, you know, it's really, if you have a halfway decent engaged audience, it shouldn't be too hard to make the review cut. So get out there and get your shows nominated for sure. Hey, probably on the Monday show, I'm going to be announcing a survey. And this survey is something that we have partnered up with the Association for Downloadable Media. And it's going to be basically a podcast-wide survey. Everyone in the podcasting space that's involved with the ADM is going to be promoting this. So you may hear this on some of the shows that you're currently listening to as well. All you need to do is when we announce the location and give you the link and everything, all you need to do is fill it out one time. So if anyone tells you, hey, we want you to go over and fill out an ADM survey, the ADM survey, is a one-time deal. It doesn't matter whose show you listen to. It's a big collective. We're trying to collect a huge amount of information in a very short period of time. I'll talk more about it on the Monday show. There will be no Thursday show this week. Okay, so this is the one and only show this week. Vegas just is too crazy, and there will be no show. So I'll let you know that right up at the beginning. So a week from today will be the next podcast that I record. And probably the one or two times a year that I don't record a show is during New Media Expo and also during CES. So kind of my little time to walk away from the mic as well and enjoy myself and have a good time out in Vegas. But this big survey Monday, where I want you all to get ramped up and be prepared for it. And if you hear about it in another show, it'll be the same thing I'm talking about. I just want you to be aware of it. Hey, let's take care of a little business here before we get right into the content. I got a huge stack of stuff for you. And, you know, even though it's Columbus Day, there is a fair amount of news today, a lot of stuff going on. But let's take care of a little business. If you're looking for a domain name, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, you know, there's a lot of hosting providers. There's a lot of domain registers. There's a lot of folks out there that offer products and services. Okay, you can go crazy shopping for a web host. You can go crazy trying to decide which domain provider to use. But I'm going to tell you, I stand behind GoDaddy.com. I have well over 300 personal domains, actually domains that I have registered at GoDaddy.com. I've got up to 7 servers right now sitting on their hosting services, a number of shared hosting accounts, and really the service has been outstanding. I stand behind it. They're the company I support, the company that supports us as well, and have been here for a long time supporting this show and many, many other shows in the podcasting space. So if you're looking for a domain name, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, an SSL certificate, renewing some .coms or need to transfer some, GoDaddy's where it's at. And when you get to that checkout counter, don't forget my promo codes, okay? The promo codes can be found on a link on the second column of the website. It'll list them all. But the most important ones, of course, that Geek5, that'll save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. The ComSale will save you money on .com renewals. And, of course, on .com names as well. And that code Todd will save you 10% on general purpose products that you pick up at GoDaddy. Again, all the codes for every occasion are listed on my promo page at Geek News Central. Definitely check that out. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. All right, okay, over this past weekend, matter of fact, Jeffrey just emailed me. Jeffrey from geekazine.com emailed me and said, hey, Todd, the everything's ready. I need to know where to send the videos for the last roundtable. The Andy McCaskey from SDR News and Jeffrey Powerson, geekazine.com, did the last tech podcast roundtable, of course, sponsored by GoToMeeting. And I'm excited to see what those guys were able to put together. They actually had a company that came on and actually did a presentation, and I'm excited to see that. But, you know, when it comes down to GoToMeeting, there's an old way to meet for business, you know, whether that be over the phone or in person, but there's also a new, better way. You can meet clients and colleagues online with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is like meeting in person, but really it's less time-consuming and less expensive. You know, you look at the airplane tickets I just spent going back to the East Coast and back. Now, I was in a conference situation where I was on multiple days training, and really it wasn't a short meeting type of thing, so it wasn't good for just doing a simple online meeting. But you can start a meeting with just a click. Everyone can see your computer desktop on their screen so you can follow along as you move from page to page. Use GoToMeeting to host a sales presentation, product demo, or training sessions. You even collaborate on documents with colleagues and so forth. Our listeners, you can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's an unlimited online meetings free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. For a free trial. Thanks for GoToMeeting for being an ongoing sponsor here at Geek News Central, and of course of the Tech Podcast Roundtable as well. And as soon as we get that up over there, I will have a link to that probably up on the blog as well. Now let me go through my little list here and make sure I've got everything out. Tech magazines, make sure you check out the Tech magazine offers on the website as well. That's available. Talked about the Vegas and the nominations. Talked about, CES 2010. We're still planning. We're still moving forward. Still looking for a sponsor. If you have a company that is looking to get some major exposure during CES, we have reached millions, literally millions upon millions, tens of millions, in fact, each year when we do our content from CES. And I guess that is the content that I say is the gift that keeps on giving. When we put that content up, there's over 100 some videos were done last year. You would be just blown away by the amount of traffic we drive through search engines to those interviews. So it's a great sponsor opportunity out there. So again, we're looking for sponsors for CES 2010. And if you're interested, drop me a line, of course, on anything I talk about today, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call our voicemail hotline at +1 619-342-7365. That's your place where you can go and rant. And we do have a rant today on one of the voicemail entries, so I'll have to get to that. Hey, I do want to give a shout out to my friend V, that's all I'm going to say, who just picked up a new Apple notebook and is in computer heaven. Congratulations. And he missed getting it laser engraved, but I think he's pretty infatuated with the machine already. And he had asked me originally who has the best bump resistant computers on the market. And because he had bricked his machine by his previous laptop by knocking it over and something had happened. And there's a couple of companies, but since you've already picked up a Mac, well, you really don't need my advice on that. But good luck with your new computer, V, out there in Vegas. Okay, let me go ahead and get into the regular content here. And let me close this window. Again, if you're joining us on Ustream, thanks for coming and hanging out today. I appreciate it. And I don't want to use that transition. Do you guys see that blue transition started? There we go. This is a better transition. So let's see here. Let's get Chrome loaded. And some pretty enticing articles tonight that I'm going to talk about, actually this afternoon here in Honolulu. And, of course, right now this machine is gasping for breath because I have so many windows open. The machine I use here on my desktop is just about due for a replacement. And I think when Windows 7 comes out and once the machines get on the market, I think that's the move I'm going to go to here. And come on, cooperate with me. And it's trying here. Okay, let me go ahead and start off with an attorney defending against one of the attorneys that have been big in defending against music piracy has been very critical of the RIAA and many of his blog postings on his personal blog. Wired.com is reporting on how a judge has been asked by the a judge has been asked by the RIAA to sanction this guy, but the judge has basically said that this individual didn't cross any ethical bounds by filing motions broadly attacking the recording industry and at the same time posting them on his blog. So a magistrate has ruled this, rejecting demands from the RIAA for monetary sanctions. So this is a big win from the aspect of, you know, one more on us for against the RIAA. So good news on that. Hey, I wanted to – I had to laugh today because I read a post over on ycombinator.com. And I think this originally came from Hacker News, but I want to read this, and I just want to share with you guys a few thoughts. And this is kind of startup business tech related. This guy goes on to say, he said, hey, this is from a blog post on ycombinator.com. The guy says, I'm a sole founder of a year-old startup that is modestly profitable. At this stage, I need another technical person to help me develop the product further. I want to hire a top-notch engineer, and I'm willing and able to pay a market salary. I recently pitched my startup to a grad school classmate who is currently working at a major tech company in the Seattle area, and he seemed interesting. This guy is one of the best engineers I know, and he's joined, and if joined, it would be a huge help to me, both from the point of view of sharing the technical work and just the emotional burdens of a startup. I've been looking for a second employee for a while, and this is the first one I found who is interested in my startup. The problem is that he wants to join as a co-founder instead of as an employee. However, I feel that I am the one who took all the real risk in taking the startup from scratch to where it is today. I don't want to give up half my startup to another person. I'm willing to pay him more than he currently earns, plus 5 to 10% equity in the startup. But I have a feeling this won't be acceptable to him. Now, this guy goes on asking for advice. And based upon experience, you know, what's to say that this guy hires this kid, brings him in as, let's say he brings him in as a co-founder and doesn't pay him hardly nothing. Let's say he pays him minimum wage. You know, what happens if, you know, this guy has 50% of the company's stake or 49 or whatever it may be, and he works at it for 6 months or a year or however long it takes for him to vest his, you know, his startup percentage. Because, you know, that's what it is in these contracts that they have. When you come on a startup, there's basically language in there that says, okay, you have to put in this much time for your percentage to vest in the company. You know, what happens if this guy goes and, you know, does that time and then says, okay, see you later, and he's still, you know, holding 49% or even 5 to 10% of the equity in the startup? This is something that every startup needs to be very wary of. And it has to have very strong exit rules on, you know, if you don't stay with the company until, you know, a certain point. There has to be heavy, heavy rules in here. And for any of you that are starting thinking about doing a startup, you really need to get sound legal advice from someone that is used to doing startups, so that get the language into contracts that will make sure that anyone that you bring on as either as a founder in the company or co-founder, make sure that it's very strict in there where, you know, the individual just can't get his vesting time and walk away. So I hope this guy gets good legal advice, and that's what I would recommend to anyone doing a startup. And, you know, in this day and age, you know, people will have a tendency to, get away with what they can get away with. And I think it's critical that folks maintain, you know, when they're doing business is business, and get good legal advice. But I struck this as struck me funny because, you know, this is some of the things that Raw Voice faced when we were starting up. We had to decide how we were going to structure everything in order to make sure that it was fair and that people that walked away, whether or not they were vested or not. And I think it's this is a pretty good post and something to contemplate on if you're getting ready to start any new business today. All right, Mac users. If you are logged into your Mac and then you go into a guest account, there's been some reports that somehow by logging into a guest account within Snow Leopard could cause a mass deletion of all user files on the primary account. And when I say mass deletion, I mean mass deletion. And as Engadget is reporting, the problem goes like this. If one clicks on the guest account after upgrading their machine to OS 10.6 and everything hangs, there's at least a decent chance that all your data will be evaporated whenever you surf back over to the main profile. Apple has yet to address the issue, at least publicly, but we recommend that you disable guest accounts on your machines immediately in order to protect your data. And I've got a little story to share with you a little later in the show about some other things you need to be concerned about when backing up your data as well. Moving on here. You know, we haven't talked about the Hadron Collider in a while, but a physicist wants to test hyperdry propulsion in the Large Hadron Collider. Now, how come every time the Hadron Collider comes up in a conversation piece that, either it's, people are talking about the doomsday, scenario with that device, or we're talking about, hyperdry propulsion. Is this just, I love scientists. I love physicists. I love what they do. I'm glad they have big brains. And I love that they try to test different theories out. But it really makes you wonder, if there's sound science and safety behind some of the things that they are considering. Apparently, a physicist named Franklin Felber, what a name, has been musing over a little-known German paper from the 1920s. Now, that's already, to me, saying be very aware. Anyway, The Foundation of Physics by David Hilbert, which states in part that under certain conditions, a stationary mass should repel a relativistic particle. If this is true, Felber concludes, then shouldn't a relativistic particle repel a stationary mass? This is according to MIT's Technology Review. The Hadron Collider would be the perfect place to test this idea. Felber could set up a test mass next to the beamline and measure the forces on it as the particles whiz by. Now, wouldn't it be kind of cool? They're sitting there and the particles are whizzing by, and then all of a sudden this mass just like disappears. But what is to stop other stuff from like disappearing or going into hyperdrive and leaving the planet at a high rate of speed? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? But anyway, something makes you go, hmm. Okay, again, Apple users, I should have had this linked up to the next article. I didn't get it organized correctly tonight. Are Apple time capsules short-lived? Do you have a time capsule? If you do, be very, very wary. I would get your receipt out, and I would look at the receipt on when you bought the time capsule. If you have one that's been in operation for 17 months and 17 days, you have outlived a large number of the time capsules that are out there. The average lifespan of 125 and counting dead Apple time capsules at the Apple Time Capsule Memorial Register is 17 months and 17 days is the average time. So be very, very careful if you have a time capsule. And it's been running, apparently, the cheap Hitachi drives is what's being touted as the number one issue. We're going to talk a little more about Hitachi and backups a little later. And any of you that have T-Mobile Sidekicks, you'll know what I'm talking about already. Hey, over on Gizmodo, the inventor of the web is really sorry. And he's sorry about destroying so many trees by when he invented the World Wide Web. He said if he had to do it over again, he would get rid of the /// And, people always ask, why do you have to put http://// in the web address? Well, you just do. That's the way it was designed. That's how the web recognizes a web page. But he said if he had it to do all over again, he would just use HTTP:// and whatever the address is. But hey, it's not too late. Let's update the protocol and so it'll accept both. It's never too late to change anything. This office today it's daylight here, and it's been hot and muggy in Hawaii, and very little trade winds. And usually I do the show here in Hawaii at night, and I'll be honest with you, I feel like it's about 100 degrees in this office right now. So it's very uncomfortable doing this show at the time of night. If you guys were watching on the other camera, you could see the sweat running down my brow. Hey, let's talk a little bit more about Comcast. Comcast has already said that they are going to be putting essentially botnet cops on the security beat. And there's a little more explanation about what they're doing here. And they've been working at this for nearly a year to put up a what they're calling a constant guard. It's a culmination of a multi-year effort to create a comprehensive approach to protecting customers from increasingly sophisticated online security threats, and there are several components to the initiative. Number one, there's a customer security assurance team that will proactively contact customers to respond to issues relating to bot spam and virus-infected PCs, as well as other security-related issues. And the hope is that if you're on Comcast and your machine has been taken over by a bot, the CSA team will know about it and alert you. Number two, Comcast customers receive security software started as a standard part of their service, including McAfee Internet Security Suite, a toolbar for sniffing out spyware and other malware. And third, Comcast customers will get access to a security channel. It's a web portal that will collect security tips, alerts, and tools. So the Constant Guard initiative is intended to help Comcast users fight botnets, in particular botnets by nature that are infecting a growing number of machines out there. So this is, again, I applauded Comcast on the last show. Again, I applaud them again today as we get more details on what they're getting ready to roll out and how long is it going to be before Time Warner and these other companies get their act together and through the Roadrunner service and so forth and make something available to on other internet networks. Okay, let's talk a little bit about a program. And again, I'm going to say a little caution here. I found this in a forum posting over at Podcast Alley, and it's called the Danusoft Media Converter Ultimate. This is a Windows application which I've heard about before. But it's it will rip DVDs, remove DRM, convert HD video and regular video audio. It will burn video to DVDs, and it helps you to copy video and audio to different devices. So I have this linked up in the show notes to you. If you're still looking for an application that you can use to rip DVDs and so forth, this looks like it'd be a good one. And again, I have not personally tried this out. I've heard about the program. So do just a little bit of due diligence on this one before you download it and install it. But I have heard pretty good things about this application specifically. Hey, I had to laugh because Scoble today wrote a blog post saying digital iPhone cheapskates. And we talked about this a little bit on the last show. And actually, I paid for the app he's talking about. It's called let me look here at the actual app. It's called Tweety. It's a Twitter app, and actually I'm using it now in replacement of Twitterific, which I was using before. But Tweety users are complaining that they've had to pay for an upgrade. And, just like any other, software application out there, when a developer puts enough time in and revs a version, you would think that, you pay for a Windows update, you pay for a update on your Macs, why wouldn't you pay for an update on an iPhone application? And I boil it back down to people are so used to getting stuff for free that even though they pay for something, they think that gives them a lifetime license to have access to something for free. And questions I keep getting asked on podcast hosting, how come you charge for hosting? Well, it costs money to deliver media. Do I look like, you know, Fort Knox? You know, so while a lot of companies or some companies out there still give away free hosting, I'm in the position right now that, hey, I'm a company that wants to make money and stay in business. And it's same with developers. If you want developers to continue to build apps, after all, it's $3 or $2.99 or whatever it was. You know, how many of us spend $3 on Starbucks or whatever? You know, so you don't get a free refill when you go to Starbucks with your cup, do you? Same thing with Microsoft. Or, you know, you don't upgrade your machine, you don't get the upgrade for free. So as Robert says, I agree. I love paying for apps. And it's because you encourage developers to build more cool apps that I can. I'm not an app developer. If I was, I'd download. You know, I'd build my own. Actually, there's only so many hours in a day. Do we all have time to do that? No. A little article that we've talked about this many, many times here on the show. And Dave Weiner brings it up. Dave Weiner sadly lost his father last week. And, you know, as all of us have had loved ones pass away, and especially loved ones that are on the internet, there's this ongoing discussion about, okay, how do we maintain what they have on the net? And I just shudder. I think about right now. I have my wife has the master password to all my to my KeePass account, so that she can get in and find the logins to all my Flickr account, to my Twitter accounts, to my hosting servers. You know, she can get access to all that. But will she really know what to do with it? So, if I drive out the driveway here and something happens to me, or if I walk down the street and have a heart attack, you know, what happens to the content that I have online? I really want my content to continue to live out in future years. And she would have to reach out to someone to say, hey, help me save his data. Help me get it someplace where it's going to be safe. And really, at this point, it would only be as safe as she'd be willing to pay for hosting costs and renewing of fees. And, you know, with me gone, being the major breadwinner of the household, that probably would not be a very high priority. Now, the insurance money obviously would go so far. But I feel, as Dave does, that we need one or more institutions or businesses that can manage our electronic trust over a very long period of time. And I want this content that I'm creating today to be available not only to the outside world for a long time, but also for my kids and my kids' kids and so forth. And, you know, who's the person that we can trust with our electronic data footprints? And I don't know if there is anybody out there currently that is Google set up to be able to become an archivist? Can we trust them so that 100 years from now, my ancestors can come in and review this material in a format that is still currently for the day and age? I don't know. You know, who's to do this and how much is it to cost? Or should we not even worry about it? Dave has said that he is from here on out. And I think this is a pretty big commitment by Dave. He says he wants to move forward with someone to come up with some method or institution or company or something to fill this role. And I'd be willing at this point to, you know, if a company said, okay, for the next 100 years, we'll maintain your data, keep it current, here's the cost. You know, write a check, right? So how many of you'd be willing to write a check? How big of a check would you be willing to write? Because once I'm dead and gone, someone else is going to have to pay for it. Because, you know, you never see an armored car fall on a hearse, right? So, you know, unless you set that up in a trust and you have, you know, funds being raised through. But usually that stuff goes to your loved ones. I agree with Dave. There's a huge amount of work to do to get ready for the future. And we have to have a way to have a future-safe archive of content that's been created out there. Otherwise, it's just going to go into a digital wasteland and never be found again. Now, obviously, what we have in our local hard drive is probably where the majority of family members are going to be able to get content off of. But there's going to be a whole industry. Someone is going to get bloody rich. Bloody rich coming up with the right solution for this over time. You know, you get buried with a hard drive. got your life work on it. You know, who knows? It might, you know, might be a good business plan. You know, when someone wants to know about, like, hey, let's go down to the mortuary. You know, let's, and you wouldn't be buried with a hard drive, but let's check out great-great-great-great-grandpa Todd's digital lifestyle. Let's see what he, you know, see what he did or didn't do. So maybe this is what mortuaries will have to start doing. I don't know. All right, let's talk about mobile. You guys know I don't talk about mobile on this show too much. But boy, oh boy, this just cannot be passed up. This has to be, or the past week has to have been Microsoft mobiles, first of all, had to have been their worst week about everyone really just lambasting Microsoft Windows 6.5. And no one had really anything positive to say about Windows Mobile 6.5 at all. And really just basically said, well, it just looked like 6.1, but prettied up a little bit. And then over the weekend, or actually late last week, there was reports about some folks with Sidekicks having issues. T-Mobile announced just this bombshell that told old Sidekick users, sorry, we've lost all your data, and it's non-recoverable. Now, last time I checked, T-Mobile is a pretty big company. And the last I checked, that company should have had some pretty smart people working for them. Well, it turns out that it wasn't all T-Mobile's fault, because Microsoft, and how this all works, Microsoft is responsible, was responsible for the storage of a lot of the Sidekick data. And they was getting ready to do an upgrade to the Sidekick, and they outsourced that to Hitachi. Now, for reasons unknown, Hitachi failed to make a backup of any of this data before starting this upgrade. Long story short, the upgrade ran into complications, data was lost, and without a backup to revert to, untold thousands of Sidekick users no longer have their data. It's gone. Gone, 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 gone. Now, okay, where's the other archives? You know, the stuff that's archived that's maybe a month old? There was none. One set of data sets was all they had for every Sidekick user in the country. Well, T-Mobile said, we're sorry, you can cancel your contracts without penalty. You can get a G1 at a much reduced price. And they suggested Blackberries or Androids. So, you know, Microsoft spent $500 million, I believe, for this company that was storing the Sidekick data. Let me actually read through this. I mean, it's just ugly, the amount of damage that has been done here. Obviously, T-Mobile's halted all sales of Sidekicks, and heads are going to roll. There's going to be – can you imagine – can you imagine being the CEO of T-Mobile and waking up in the morning and having to have explained to you that your customer's data has been lost because there was no backup? Can you just imagine? Can you even comprehend that? I would like have an axe out, and you can absolutely guarantee there would be people on the streets within hours. This is going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. Remember on this, though, even though those people bought their phones and services from T-Mobile, the actual data loss was a company called Dangers. And Danger was bought by Microsoft, and aka Microsoft's fault. Now, T-Mobile's going to bear the brunt of the mob on this. But can you imagine? Can you imagine? I just, first of all, T-Mobile should have had oversight on these idiots to begin with. You know, are you doing backups? Wouldn't that be part of your contract plan with them for servicing this data? Wouldn't there, you know, that's the first thing. That's the first thing I you know, when we're doing stuff, we have multiple redundant backups of all of our software, everything. They're on FTP servers. They're in SYN repositories. They're on separate machines. They're in offsite storage. You know, if raw voice has a catastrophic failure on a server, we're going to be able to recover. Now, we've got stuff that's going to, you know, basically if a machine goes down, we've got stuff in place where another machine will take over. We've got redundancies there. But, you know, nothing is perfect. But as long as you have the source data, right, you can recover. And this is a, you know, this is something that happens hourly. Data gets backed up or however often they run the scripts. But it just blows me away. It really, really does. This is, you know, there's going to be a lot of case studies. A lot of IT professionals are going to be doing, or people that are going to school are going to be doing term papers and stuff on the fallout of this. Imagine destroying a brand overnight. Overnight destroying a complete brand. A whole phone is dead, dead in the water. No one will ever buy another Sidekick. You just mark my words. That whole line of phones is done. If you're a Sidekick user, I'm feeling your pain, my friends. But that's another thing, too. The cloud. We need to have ways to back our own data up out of the cloud. We got to have a way to store our own data. We have to be responsible for our stuff. If we're not, you know, more and more this is going to happen when there's idiots out there in the marketplace are trying to cut quarters. What do hard drives cost these days? Nothing, right? You know, I used to buy hard drives one at a time. I don't buy hard drives one at a time. I buy them a box of 10 now. You know, think about that, a box of 10 hard drives. Who buys hard drives onesie twosies, you know? You know, they're cheap. Oh, it cracks me up. All right, this goes along with a New York Times article, Training Decline in Everest of Digital Data, and how that they feel right now, companies are feeling that university students do not think big enough in that they don't understand, you know, what's going on in the marketplace. How many of you have more than a terabyte of storage in within your you know, basic grasp right now where you're sitting at? I would say a large majority of you probably have more than a terabyte. I'm looking around this office. Based on the video and everything I have multiple terabytes of storage here. Multiple. And terabytes is offsite storage too. So, you know, they're saying now that technology workers and people that are coming out of college need to be thinking in the petabytes and multiple petabytes. You know, and I think this sums it up. And this is what from the New York Times says, the next generation of computer science has to think in terms of what would be described as internet scale Facebook. For example, uses more than a petabyte of storage space to manage its use. Okay, Facebook uses more than one petabyte of storage space to manage its users, 40 billion photos. A petabyte is about 1,000 times as large as a terabyte and could store about 500 billion pages of text. So Google right now churns through 20 times that amount of information every single day as compared to Facebook having a petabyte of storage just to manage 40 billion photos. Think about that, 40 billion photos. What a story that could tell if you could see them all. It's a big world out there, folks. There's a lot of people, you know, digital. You know, what does it take? Snap, snap, click, click. Takes nothing. Where before, we were worried about film, right? Oh, that roll of film cost, we were being very careful. And now, who cares? It's just storage. Now, speaking of video, Twitter has said, nope. There was a rumor out. Twitter said, nope, we're not doing video. We're not doing video tweets. It's not happening. Don't worry. There's lots of third-party services out there that will do that for you. You know, you can tweet a video, you can tweet audio. I do it all the time prior to launching this show. So, you know, it's not a big deal. I just use a third-party service. But Twitter is not going to let you directly through their service, at least Twitter-supported video tweeting. How many of you are Photoshop fans? You know, I love Photoshop, but, you know, I am not at all graphically inclined. Even drawing stick pictures on a piece of paper don't work real well for me. Adobe on Friday announced a new Photoshop app for the iPhone. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I have a hard enough time using Photoshop on a computer, let alone using Photoshop on an iPhone. You have got to be kidding me. Is anyone using this? It lets you edit photos from both their phone and online libraries at Photoshop.com. It's free of charge. It offers such tools as cropping, image rotation, color control, and simple one-touch filter effects that can change the look and feel of shots all at once. It also features undo and redo controls if you make a mistake or want to revert back to the original. It takes just a few taps. This is one app that's not going to make my phone just because I would screw up any picture I take. I absolutely guarantee it. That's one class I ever take. It would be a Photoshop class. So anyway, if you want it for your iPhone, it is available. All right. Hey, Andy, I know you're listening. Andy, the doctor out in Chicago, my good friend who was our cameraman at CES, who's getting ready to head off to Shanghai, China. Dude, your phone that you're having issues with, there is a new jailbreak, my friend. Hackers have sprung the latest iPhone OS from out of jail. You can jailbreak it now. And Jihad Blocker lets Windows users jailbreak their iPhone OS 3.1.2 on all iPhones and iPod Touch models, regardless of their hardware configuration. If you're a Mac user and don't have a PC, sorry. This is only for PCs right now. So anyway, I have the link up to this in the show notes. You can jailbreak your 3.1.2 iPhone edition. Let's switch gears a little bit here. Talk about an article that's over on Ars Technica. And this is an article that has been written from time to time by different – it's the same type of an article that's been written by different people at different times. But it's entitled 100 Years of Big Content, Fearing Technology in Its Own Words. And I'll just read the subtitle here, then I'm not going to go into too depth of the article, but I think you guys will get the context. For the last 100 years, rights holders, in other words, those people that create media, have fretted about everything from the player piano to the VCR to the digital TV to Napster. And here are those objections in big content's own words. Now, it's the sky is falling. The sky is falling. That's what they all say, right? They said sky was falling about peer-to-peer. They said sky was falling about DVRs. Sky was falling about VCRs. Sky was falling even back in the very early 1900s over the latest musical intervention, talking about theatrical threat to his livelihood over the gramophone and the player piano. You guys ever seen a player piano, old style? Actually, put a sheet on there, had perforated holes in it. It would roll over a roller and the actual piano would play. Of course, more modern pianos today, you just put a MIDI player in, or actually put a USB stick into them and they'll actually play through a MIDI file. It is pretty comical to go through and read this article because it talks about all these people lamenting. Here's a quote. I'm just going to leave you with this and then you guys can go check it out. This is about the Xerox machine. And Xerox photocopy, okay? Here's a quote that was made. "We are going to bleed and hemorrhage unless this Congress at least protects one industry that is able to retrieve a surplus balance of trade and wholesale. Total future depends on its protection from the savagery and the ravages of this machine." That was talking about the Xerox machine and how publishers were worried that we were just going to completely copy every book and never pay for another book again. Same things about the VCR. And, you know, I think you'll laugh, and I think we'll all realize that right now we're in the same situation where the sky is falling about net neutrality. Allowing certain things to happen is going to ruin our business. We can apply this in so many different ways. It just goes to show that all we have to do is take a little time, and ultimately we will win. We will win these battles against these diehard idiots who are – I guess, hell-bent on making sure that they fight to their absolute last breath that a certain technology is going to ruin them. You know, where are these pundits at years later? I'd love to see some interviews from some of these folks that are still alive saying, okay, what, you know, did this really turn out the way you thought it would? And did it really matter 10 years down the road? And, you know, I'm sure they will still say the Xerox machine was the nemesis of the publishing world. All right, information that can save your life, your own included, and there's an app for that. There's a new app called iMobile Care, a potential lifesaver that you can carry around in your pocket. It was launched at the beginning of this month. The app is primarily a reference guide that lets you obtain essential information about medical conditions and situations quickly and easily. The tool allows you to get a visual and textual explanation of how to deliver aid and care during emergencies and events such as accidents, bites, stings, choking, injury, poisoning, burns, and many other critical situations. You know what? If I have to go to my iPhone and look up how to save someone's life when they're choking, that person is probably going to die because you're going to spend too much time looking for this info. But there is some other good stuff here that could help you out. You know, if, folks, if you're worried, if you're going to carry this app, you know, take a Red Cross CPR class and take a basic first aid. I've told you guys before, I did CPR on a guy that I found that had collapsed, and sadly, my CPR efforts were not successful, being that I had found him too late into his massive heart attack. But, you know, you never know. You never know when you're going to be walking down the street and someone claps in front of you and is going to need assistance. So go up there to Red Cross, take a CPR class. And if you haven't taken one in a while, you know, you should take one every couple of years at a bare minimum. I do, and I highly recommend it to everyone. But anyway, good app for you there. Probably for snake bites and bug bites and that kind of stuff. Might be good. this article is going to lead into another article. How many of you like playing around with fonts on different stuff that you create? 45 outstanding free vintage fonts available at Nopi.com. I have a link up in the show notes here. You can actually download the file into your system. Some pretty cool ones here. These are all like... if you're looking to do a country theme or a Western theme, there's lots of very nice old vintage fonts here. Now, speaking about fonts, we talked just a little bit on the last show about NBC being sued by the Font Bureau. And apparently what has happened, a little more details have come out, is that the Font Bureau has claimed that both CNBC and NBC bought only a single seat license for some of its popular fonts, but later copied them to multiple computers and even sent copies to third parties. So they've been sued for, $20 million or $2 million. And so we'll see what happens with this. But appears that MSNBC has been, sharing some software that they shouldn't be sharing and some fonts. So we'll see if they end up having to pay up. Over on Mashable, 20 fantastic free iPhone apps for parents. And one is Web, we just talked about a mobile medical app. Another one is WebMD Mobile. Shutterfly for your iPhone. Here's one for you that have young kids. There's a timeout timer. We could go into some timeout scenarios, but I'm not going to go there on this show. Sitter Squat Bathroom Finder. Hey, this is, I'm going to tell you. When you got kids, and when they're like, Dad, I need to use the bathroom. How bad? Bad. How bad? I can't make it home. Or the little one, you know, when he's telling you, you know, you got about 3 minutes. So the Sit or Squat Bathroom Finder probably works out real well. So you can actually input in there if the bathroom is open or closed. It actually tells you if the restaurant's open or closed and gives you some locations that you can dash into. So this is a pretty good one. But anyway, a number of apps like that, a lot of fun ones for parents. I have it linked up in the show notes. Okay, let's talk just a little bit about the Pirate Bay. There's lots of stuff going on, lots of action going on. And right now the BREN, the anti-piracy group, BREIN, says that it knows who controls Reservilla. I guess Reservilla is the name of a company that's supposedly the owner of the Pirate Bay. And they produced a credit report from Experian, who has basically said that Peter Sunday, one of the admins of the Pirate Bay, is the owner of this company. That's registered to an offshore country. And Peter Sunday has come out screaming, basically saying that the documents that Bren has produced is a forgery and that they're lying and doing everything they can to point ownership towards him. And as I think we all probably realize, you know, these guys have done a pretty good shell game of trying to hide ownership of the Pirate Bay. And if this turns out to be true, that this credit report does show him as a as an owner, the CEO of it, it could be pretty damaging to those guys that are trying to avoid paying damages and so forth. All right, moving on here. The U.S. has more than 120,000 schools, hospitals, and libraries, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation believes that they can all have fiber optic internet for between $5 and $10 billion. This is pretty interesting. On October 5th, and this is via Ars Technica, on October 5th, the foundation met with the FCC broadband coordinator, Blair Levin, and the purpose of that meeting was to provide a cost estimate for one of the foundation's ideas running fiber optic cables to every anchor institution in the United States, being libraries, hospitals, community colleges, and public schools. This was in lieu of the FCC's asking for public comments on the plan and the viability and cost estimates, of which they say basically trying to roll out broadband projects as part of the stimulus package. But the Gates Foundation believes that there's 123,000 anchor institutions in the United States that would need to be wired up, and it would cost between $5 and $10 billion just to put the infrastructure in place. This would not be the ongoing backhaul cost. But you know something? As much money as we have given to card companies, sent overseas to foreign governments, $5 to $10 billion is cheap. Even if it was $100 billion, it would be cheap to wire up every school, library, hospital, community college. It would be so – this, you know, there is money well spent. Because what do we – you know, I went to a – I'll share with you. When I went out to Vegas about 3.5-4 years ago, I did a presentation in front of the entire – Las Vegas school system. It was just like probably 1,000 teachers or more that were at this, administrators. And I did a discussion about new media and how new media could be used in the training environment for students that have English as a second language. And basically what the crest of it was that Las Vegas school district has one of the highest number of students in their school system that speak English as a second language. I think they have to cover 50-some languages in the Las Vegas school district. And their thought was is that, of course, they couldn't have – and these kids are spread out all over the entire district, so they couldn't have multilingual teachers in every school, but they did have multilingual teachers enough to cover the language sets, and that they could put school material together in native languages through a podcast format. And, you know, this is a perfect way to use new media. And while the person was transitioning to English as their primary language, they still could get information in their native tongue. Now, what blew me away was I was in their most advanced technical, I guess it was a technical section, and basically it was a technical institute or whatever. It was part of the school system anyway. I think these were high school students coming in, programming and that type of stuff. And it's kind of like a career center type of thing. I don't even want to call it that. But anyway, when I found out how much broadband they had there, it was less than a DSL connection. It was horrendous. And I found out that the entire Las Vegas school district was the same way. There was very little bandwidth into schools. And to me, that was just utterly shocking. You know, that you had this state that gets billions of dollars in revenues from the gambling industry, yet the school systems did not have broadband. And this is a story that's all over the United States. We have this issue in every school district in the country. And if you don't believe it, go talk to your local school district and find out what kind of broadband capability they have into the schools. So if kids are going to expand and they're going to be able to compete in this new world, they got to have the tools and tool sets available to them when they're going to school to do so. So I believe that this fiber to schools, hospitals, community colleges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is just something we have to really, really push for. And you know, fiber to it in the backbone, I think, is a small price to pay to stay competitive. We're talking now about researchers who are dealing with data sets that are so big that they have to, harness the power of hundreds of computers within universities to do calculations and, their supercomputer stuff that they need to use. What we're moving into, folks, is a time and period where those that are doing some of the heaviest research today need a lot more computing power, because it's just the problems they're solving are getting much, much bigger. You look at DNA and the genetics and genomic code, everything is huge. So we'll see. But hopefully, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will kick some common sense into the FTC, and we'll get some of this money diverted and get some of these institutions wired up. All right, the big event, crashing into the moon on Friday. I got up, was ready to go, had my computer on, had the news station was on, was waiting for a big event, and it was like the biggest non-event from NASA that I have ever seen. And I think they, I'm not saying it, but I think the operator of the camera maybe have messed up a little bit. But NASA is saying, No, hold on, folks. Even though you didn't see the plume, you didn't see anything else, we've had huge success. We gathered a lot of data. The scientists are going to go over it for months, blah, 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 blah. And they're all excited. But, you know, I think NASA, even though they're saying that, we'll see. They really, really will, because there's supposed to be this geyser of Derbis, and people are supposed to be able to see it with 10-inch telescopes. They saw nothing. Nothing. And some of the best hardware was in place. The Hubble didn't see anything. So I think they just hit like this big iron core, made a dent in it, and it just didn't do anything. Let's move on here. Let me look at the time. Oh, my gosh, I'm long. All right, Dyson has unveiled a blade-free fan. And when you see this thing, you're going to say, how does this thing work? And when you see the price, you're going to say it ought to push as much air as they're saying it does for the price tag. But this is a fan that has no blades and pushes, what are they saying, 181, let me go through here, let me read it real quick. It's a, they have a 10-inch and a 12-inch version that will push 118 gallons of air a second through this device. Again, no fans, brushless. This guy's a smart dude. So I'll have this link up in the show notes, of course, for you to check out. Zune Marketplace for Mac OS 10, that's the rumor. Sounds like Zune or that the folks at Microsoft are getting ready to do that. I'll see when I see Rob at BlogWorld Expo if I can get any info out of him. He'll probably be mum's word, but the rumor is that those of you on Macs are soon going to be able to get the Zune Pass via the Mac. So keep you advised, okay? Hey, remember this guy that is sitting in the UK? That is the most annoying pop-up ad I ever seen. It's a big round, looks like a CD disc in the middle of the screen. That is annoying. You guys remember that computer hacker Gary McKinnon, who is basically he's been fighting extradition to the United States on charges of breaking into U.S. military and NASA computers. Well, apparently he has lost his latest battle, and he may be one step closer to extradition. So two ads just popped up. Boy, I tell you, E-Week, are you hurting that bad for money? All right, over in Tech Dirt. Unemployed? Are you blogging? Don't put ads on your site or you might lose your unemployment check. Apparently in New York City, an individual had his unemployment benefits greatly reduced because his blog earned $1 a day in AdSense revenue. The New York Department of Labor started giving all sorts of trouble to an individual who was running ads on their blog, and basically have said, hey, yeah, you're earning money. Even though it's a buck, we don't care. You got some revenue coming in. We're going to cut your unemployment benefits, so be careful out there. This is one you want to pay attention to. I'll link it up in the show notes. All right, Olympics. The International Olympic Committee, once again, is going after some folks. There's a gentleman who shot a bunch of pictures at the Beijing Olympics, and he put them up on his Flickr page, and he put a Creative Commons license against them, and it appears the IOC has an issue with the Creative Commons license that this individual put. Can you imagine that? This guy shot pictures at the Olympics. They're his pictures that he shot. He's put a Creative Commons license up there to protect them, and the IOC is saying, no, you can't do that. Well, good luck, IOC, getting him to change that. I also heard also that the RIAA and other organizations want to push a performance tax on radio stations, and it looks like that this may be getting some support to be pushed through, And so now stations are going to be asked to pay a little bit more on performance rights for playing music on the regular radio. And I guess that's going to match up what is actually happening to internet stations. So I'm not saying that I feel sorry for radio stations. Oh, this is a good one. I had a friend of mine who was pretty upset about the Gourmet magazine being shut down. Well, it appears Robert Heidman points this to an editorial. Actually, this was on Tech Dirt. Points to an editorial in New York Times from the founder of the famous Cook's Illustrated magazine, Christopher Kimball, bemoaning Condé Nast's recent decision to shut down the magazine. And rather than talking about all sorts of mistakes by Condé Nast in managing its magazine portfolio, he works out some way to blame people who use Twitter and Google to put up their own recipes online and have their own feeble-minded opinions. This guy actually said this in an editorial on the New York Times, basically slamming you and I for actually putting our own recipes online as the reason that Condé Nast had to shut down Gourmet magazine. Didn't he think that maybe the economy is, you know, it's causing people not to buy so much gourmet food and doing so much gourmet cooking? You know, a lot of people can't afford mac and cheese right now, let alone some fancy gourmet dinner. I think that would be part of it, wouldn't you? Okay, if you're a Washington Redskin fan, you need to be going to a game. You heard about these bags that they're gonna one of the radio stations was handing out for fans to put over their heads when the teams are playing because the teams are so infuriated with the coaching staff and so forth. What appears that a Washington Post reporter took some pictures of some upset fans, and Redskins basically came back and said, hey, take those down or we'll remove your rights to have credentials at the Redskin games. So if you go to Redskin games, get your cameras out, take some pictures, put them up on the net, see if the Washington Redskins have you try to bring them down. All right, last article of the night. Soyuz spacecraft carrying two ISS crew members and a space tourist returned to Earth early Sunday. And I guess the clown from Cirque du Soleil is back. And guy's pretty goofy. He really was. I saw him on the press conference. He's wearing that red nose. And yeah, $35 million well spent. Congratulations. Okay, let me go ahead and get right into the voicemail. And then I'll knock off the emails that have come in. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is +1-619-342-7365. Here we go on the first, on the one and only voicemail tonight.
Hey, Todd, it's Sal out in New York.
Hey, Sal.
I was just listening to your podcast, the Monday one. I don't remember the exact date. And you know what? I've been listening to your comment on the whole SciStar and Apple computer situation there. And, you know, you made a very irresponsible comment, and it really shows your true colors. It's not fair play to put Apple software on another computer because
why not?
Licensing agreement, you know better than that. Come on. And number two, you're advocating that they take Apple out of the hardware business. Talk about irresponsible. You should know much better than that. Come on, you're a businessman. How would you like it if people started making comments and make concerted efforts to take you out of your podcast business? Would you like that?
First of all, I don't own a patent on podcasting. People can do whatever they want with a podcast business. I've been more than open about my business model. People are more than able if they want to duplicate what we have done. Matter of fact, I know there are several companies that have duplicated what we have done, and I encourage them to do so. Now, so far as SciStar and them putting Mac OS X on generic computers, hey, you know something? Again, my opinion is that it should be my right to put software on whatever machine I want. Sure, there's a license agreement. Sure, they don't allow it, but a lot of people do. And SciStar, they're either going to win or lose their battle with Microsoft. With Apple. Matter of fact, they're talking about some sort of a deal being done, whatever that means. I don't know, but you know, wouldn't you like some choice in your Apple selections? I think I would. You know, so paying this premium on hardware, is Apple going to fight that? Absolutely. Does it mean I like it? No. Does it mean I wish that they would be, you know, the hardware would be separated from the software? I wish it would. Is it going to happen anytime soon? Doubtful. But that's the way it goes. It's my opinion. I think we should have a choice of what hardware we run our software on. And you can run Windows on a Mac, so, you know, they don't complain about that. So why shouldn't I be allowed to run OS X on a Windows machine? Fair play, right? Just because the license says it, you know, that's the way it is right now. Can't say that I agree with it. So we'll see what happens with SciStar and licensing out their technology. It's going to prove to be very interesting on what they're able to, what Apple's able to enforce and get away with. So we'll see. So if I'm irresponsible, so be it. Again, Mac is driving the Ustream stream tonight. That's what's basically got I've got up driving that. My wife's got a Mac in the other room. You know, got a couple PCs here. Here I'm a equal opportunity Windows Mac basher when I need to be. All right, Sal, thanks for calling. I know that you love me. All right, let's move on. Got an email from Joe. And Joe is he's the person that is actually the individual that's come up with our new show intro. He said, "Hey, Todd, the Zune HD arrived a little over a week ago, and I'm really starting to like it. Thanks for your generosity. Joe, thank you for doing the work you did. I posted a review at my blog, and I'm afraid I got a somewhat long-winded, so I'll only include a link to it below. The abbreviated short version, yes, I meant to say it that way, is that I wasn't too sure about the touch interface at first, but it has really grown on me. The enhancement to the Zune software and extra features such as artist bio information take the Zune HD beyond being a simple media player. Now for the... I guess now for the show commentary. Well, Joe, you're already in the show commentary. Don't you find it ironic that the media companies are screaming that they're running out of bandwidth and using it as an excuse to packet shape and throttle traffic and charge by the kilobit over an arbitrary bandwidth cap, but they turn around and blow their own horn about adding bandwidth-intensive features such as Skype? Maybe they're trying to set themselves up to be able to extort money from consumers by giving them a taste of these features and slamming down a low bandwidth cap. As for the FTC transparency rules for bloggers, I spent a few years in radio and had to learn all about payola and plugola, which in a sense is what the FTC is trying to head off. There's a difference between walking into a restaurant asking for your meal to be comped in exchange for a mention in your blog and having your meal comped because you eat there all the time and the manager wanted to express appreciation for your patronage. There are obvious situations such as being a review unit to keep, but when you get close to the line, just as an unexpected comp, not necessarily related to your comments, where it becomes a tough call. What you want to make sure you do is remove any semblance of impropriety. I think as long as you're mixing a good faith effort, the FTC will work with you as if they have any objections to your content. Thanks, Joe. I have the link to his Zune HD review. I agree in all your statements. Yes, they're making us fat, you know, salivate over these high bandwidth intensive applications, but at the same time they're saying we're using too much bandwidth. It's an oxymoron. It really, really is. And I'm not worried about the FTC transparency rules. I think it's great because it's going to make some of these people who have been skirting the review rules for a long time or had no semblance of any type of proprietary saying, you know, they put out these reviews like they're being objective, but we all know that they just get more gear, you know. That's why I don't get a lot of gear. I'm honest in my opinions. I really am. Got an email from Barry. "Hey, Todd, last week I opened my Wall Street Journal iPhone app and got a splash screen asking me to set up my account for the upcoming paid service. I removed the application forthwith. Perhaps a knee-jerk decision, but I'm not ready to take the plunge for paid content on my phone. If every news source goes down that route, I may not have a choice, but right now the New York Times and, yes, the Associated Press are free, so I'm covered. Who knows what will happen over the next few months, and perhaps you really did not see The Daily Show a couple of months back interviewing the managing editor of The New York Times, stating that each published edition of The Times is aged news. Here is the link. A lot of truth to that. I guess in the final analysis, if all major news sources require payment, I will need to pick one to subscribe to, as a printed newspapers are going to be less available. Already many hotels do not give away a daily newspaper any longer. Wonder why. Cost or lack of interest. Regards, Barry." And you know, Barry, I'll be honest with you. I get when I stay at Hilton's, they give me the USA Today, and I just kick it in the corner. I don't even open it up because I know that the news that's in it is already 3 days old. The New York Times, same thing. I got a New York Times on the way back, and I got a Wall Street Journal too, and most of the stuff I'd already read. It was already dated news. So, you know, if you're living online, the news is old when you get it in paper format. I agree. Got an anonymous message. He says, or she or whoever this is doesn't leave a name. I have worked in a government facility for a while now, and the last two facilities had very strict but different rules. Now, this is about peer-to-peer and putting applications on computers. He goes, my current agency does not allow me to even hook a non-government-issued PC into the network at risk of termination. This also means no putting flash drives into governmental machines. In this case, I have admin access to the machine due to the type of work I perform. If I even need to load so much as a Microsoft application, I need to get approval from two security groups, Network and Enterprise, one of which maintains a list of approved apps, approved software. I picked up a MiFi for this and loved it. Oh, yeah, I bet you do. My previous contract did not have rules, but peer-to-peer software wasn't allowed at all. Issue is I could hook my government PC into the network for only internet access, but I could not get into the network itself. Just depends. Great show. And thanks for your anonymous comment. Yeah, government machines, I don't believe you've been able to peer-to-peer on those forever, ever. An email from Danny in Stephen Edge, UK. Say, hey, Todd, just finished listening to Friday podcast and couldn't help but crack up when you read my email. I don't mind if you show people the picture I sent you of the energy at home because it's all open source, and what I showed you would hopefully end up in the project. I do admire your quick wit and restraint when something like that unexpectedly happens on your show. Keep up the good work, Danny. Thanks, Danny. Got an email from Gabriel. Hey, Todd, this is Gabriel, a longtime listener from Tijuana since 2005, I think. Been wanting to write since then to thank you for your awesome podcast. You're one of my two regular shows. Oh, and also thanks, GoDaddy, for helping Todd and Ohana making it all possible. Anyway, Todd, I'll keep it short. I want to let you know about this article I found really interesting about the sandstorm that recently hit Australia and some interesting results in the aftermath. Maybe you can use it in your show, and I have the link up to it. It's from io9.com. By the way, one last thing. Do you know or may be have an estimate of how many listeners you have from Mexico? I'll try to keep in touch. Be well and keep up the awesome. I'd have to bring up the stats, but it's a pretty good number, and I'd have to look it up. But I'll get that for you for the next show. I'll try to do that. Todd, this topic's from a few shows ago, but I stumbled across this forum that may have the answer to your Mac Windows network woes, and you don't need to keep reading this on the show. And if you already solved the problem, feel free to describe. I'd shoot you a link in case you needed it. Love the show. Keep the good work. Kelly from Oregon. And I think this is all we've got here for comments tonight. Again, geeknews@gmail.com, folks. If you have comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is +1-619-342-7365. No show on Friday. Okay, remember that. Go check out some of the other shows at techpodcast.com. Don't forget me, though. I'll be back with you on Tuesday for a normal delivery of the show. And, of course, regular shows on Friday. Be back down in Florida. And as always, hey, thanks for hanging out with me, and thanks for staying subscribed and being part of the Ohana. And from a beautiful, hot, and steamy Hawaii, take care until next time. Aloha.